This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Jason McGee of IBM.
Hey, Ian. Nice to be here. I'm Jason. I'm the CTO for all things platform as a service at IBM Cloud. So I cover Kubernetes and Cloud Foundry and functions.
You've made announcements at the Cloud Foundry Summit this year of a new Cloud Foundry version from IBM. Now we already have private, we have dedicated, we have public. Where does this fit into that schedule?
We announced something we call Cloud Foundry Enterprise Environment, which is essentially a isolated or fully dedicated version of Cloud Foundry in our public cloud. As you allude to, we have a dedicated offering, or we've had one for a while. So the way to think about Cloud Foundry Enterprise Environment is it's an evolution of that dedicated offering. One of the things that we've been working on in IBM Cloud is our main target market is enterprise clients. Obviously, in the enterprise market, security and isolation are important characteristics. And so we've been trying to evolve how we deliver isolation capabilities. And what Cloud Foundry Enterprise lets you do is blend the best of public cloud with dedicated. Our current dedicated offering that we've had for a while took a long time to provision. You had to commit to a lot in advance. It was sized in large chunks. You had to get like 128 gigs of space and buy it in big chunks. It was very isolated, but it didn't feel very public cloud in nature. You didn't have as much elasticity and things like that. Cloud Foundry Enterprise solves all that, allows a self-service deployment for users, not IBM-driven deployment. It's fully elastic. It's metered by the hour. You can grow it and shrink it whenever you want, but it still provides full isolation and self-management of the Cloud Foundry environment.
That isolation, growing, shrinking, really important to a lot of companies. They've jumped into cloud. They haven't really quite got to grips with managing resources because, particularly for enterprises, they still think of this as buying for data centers in a lot of cases. Yeah. Have you worked any numbers on what you expect companies early on perhaps to save on this and how it will work for them going forwards?
I wouldn't say that we have straight up savings numbers like that to share. I think what a lot of enterprises are struggling with is they want the freedom of public cloud, the ability to deploy when they need to and change when they need to, but they have to meet their regulations, their policies, their security viewpoints. And so balancing those two things is hard for them. We think that this offering will be really valuable to them because it lets them do that. And in fact, this model, we call it public isolated model, we have for our Kubernetes offering. That's actually where we started with that idea. We have it now for our Kafka as a service offering. And so it's a nice blend of running a public cloud fully isolated on your own terms.
Kubernetes, great link. You're also part of the Irini project. We heard today that that's now been adopted by Cloud Foundry. What is the focus on that?
The focus is very simple. I think about the platform space pretty holistically. If I look at what's going on in the industry, we've all agreed on a container orchestration layer in the industry. We've all agreed on Kubernetes, not IBM, just the whole industry has agreed on that as the base layer. If I look at Cloud Foundry, what's valuable about Cloud Foundry is like rapid development model, the CF push experience, the way that an application developer can be highly productive building and running apps. Inside of Cloud Foundry, you have a container orchestration system too. It makes sense to us to align those two things, to allow the Cloud Foundry experience to live on top of the Kubernetes orchestration layer. That's what Irini is really about, is providing an option to plug in Kubernetes as the, let's say, the back end of Cloud Foundry. That has obviously some efficiency advantages. It has some operations advantages for people because they can run one platform stack. It also has advantages for developers because part of the power of Cloud Foundry is it has an opinionated model of how you build apps. That opinion doesn't fit every problem you're trying to solve. And so by having Cloud Foundry and Kubernetes closer together and be able to run as one environment allows me to drop out of Cloud Foundry into straight containers if that makes sense for different workloads that I'm after.
How hard is containers being driven by your customers? We hear a lot. We write a lot as press. I talk a lot as an analyst around it. But often we don't necessarily always engage with the enterprises. There's the star enterprises, the people everybody wants to roll out. But there's that huge underlying set of enterprises who still, when I talk to them, can't get their head around whether they should go virtual machine or container. How are you seeing that beginning to play out?
I would be foolish to say that we're not still in the early phases. IT is a complex landscape. It takes people a long time to move. There is tremendous activity around Kubernetes in the enterprise client base, like real production examples where people are using this. Lots of companies who have decided that they're going to go do containers in Kubernetes. So they've made that is my future VMs or containers decision. I think many of them have made that decision. They might be at different points of trying to figure out how to get there. You also have the whole, what do I do in my data center versus what do I go do in a public cloud, split to that decision as well that they're grappling with. The activity is, I think we're actually in a deployment phase on Kubernetes more than we are in a technical evaluation phase. I think the evaluation phase was last year or the year before, and now people are really deploying.
KubeCon this year, a lot of the attention was on security and Kubernetes. There was a lot of work being done, a lot of people being very open, talking about what the challenges were, but more importantly, talking about how we could get to solutions on that. Sure. You mentioned that the whole goal of this is a more secure solution for people. How do you bring those two together?
When I think about security and containers, there's two sides to the coin. It's an unknown, a new thing. And so there's a lot of how do I get comfortable with the security of the system? And that ultimately comes down to what operational processes I wrap around it, how I stack users, like how much multi-tenancy do I drive out of the system? I think the state of the art today is really a kube cluster per app team organization, relatively small boundaries. And that helps with security because you don't have to worry about sharing within the cluster. I think that'll change over time, but that's where we are. There's one facet to it, which is how do you operationally run Kubernetes in a secure way? That's part of the value I see in like managed Kubernetes offerings and public clouds is there's just not enough kube skill in the world. Having someone run kube for you is a good way of being successful. The flip side of the coin is all the things that Kubernetes and containers can allow you to make a more secure system more easily. You know what? I'm a developer. I really don't like security. I don't want to talk about it very much. I really would pretend to ignore it. It's a dangerous thing to ignore. And you look at a container environment, whether it's vulnerability scanning on images, the ease with which you can do application level network policies, the stuff we're doing in Istio to allow application level secure connections between things. There's a lot of cases where containers is making it much easier for a development team to build a secure application without having to become security experts. So I'm actually more excited about the upside in that space than potential downside.
What about scale? Let's look at IBM and we talk about containers. When we saw the latest round of the Z mainframes released earlier this year, conversations moved from having 8,000 VMs on a machine to 2 million containers on a machine. Of course, there's an issue of definition of what is a VM, what's a container, what resource does each offer.
Don't you love benchmarks?
But within that then becomes this challenge. We're looking around at clusters. We're looking at how enterprises are beginning to use this. Are enterprises beginning to push up towards scale, or are many of them just rolling out, deploying, understanding, getting a view of it, and then looking for their next generation?
The bulk of the market's on first couple project phase. They have something in production, but it's that early foot in the water. But there's a slice at the top, for sure, of people who have deployed container systems at scale. Within our customer base, that's certainly the case. It's true for ourselves. One of the things that we did in IBM is we decided if Kubernetes and containers was going to become the foundation of our strategy going forward, we were going to use it as our own platform. We've run massive scale systems on Kubernetes. All of our Watson AI platform runs on Kube. All of our blockchain stuff runs on Kube. All of our cloud services and data systems run on Kube. And that helps us to harden our services and gain experience at scale. Amazing thing about Kubernetes is it's by no means a perfect system, but it's done incredibly well as it's evolved at helping us run high scale systems. Customers are getting there, but it's still the leading edge customers who are at scale now, and most of the customers are on first adoption.
One of the things that surprises me is you were talking there about blockchain and other initiatives you've got going on. We don't hear a lot about IBM at scale with Kubernetes at the moment. How do you change that conversation? Because there's no doubt that when a vendor changes that conversation, the customers suddenly think, well, hang on, why aren't we taking that step?
I agree. And sometimes we don't hear enough about what IBM's doing in general, which is something I would love to see change. We do try to tell our own stories, both publicly and in private with customers. Because for one thing, in the enterprise space, IBM looks like a lot of our customers. We have the same large, complex, long history challenge that they do. And we've gone through the same transformations. And so we tell our own stories. Publicly, we've told the Watson story a little bit about how we've moved Watson all onto Kube. A few years ago, we bought the Weather Company and recently moved their weather.com and weatherunderground.com websites onto Kubernetes on IBM Cloud. We just had a hurricane in the U.S. a few weeks ago, and we actually finished the move right the week before that hurricane. I think we did 50 million page views an hour through Kube on weather.com during that hurricane. We have our own stories of large-scale, successful Kube usage, and we're trying to tell those stories.
That's some tough testing.
Yeah. If it were me, maybe I wouldn't have been like, maybe we'll do the after hurricane season, but hey, it worked.
When you then look at customers and you look at what you've been through, one of the things that as an industry we're not very good at doing is we all like to say, yeah, we got that. It's wonderful. This is it. Best practice actually is best done when we say to people, we went down this route and guess what? This bit us and that bit us and we could have done that better. How are you starting to expose that level of learning to customers?
Yeah, that's really important. And I think that getting those hard-won lessons takes time. There's no shortcut to some of those things. Some of it, I think, we try to share just through conversation and participation in the community with people and sharing our learnings and going to conferences like this and telling people what we've done and what's worked and what's not worked. Some of it we do through trying to codify that into our products themselves. As someone who runs a managed Kubernetes service and manages Cloud Foundry, you know, part of the value we're trying to provide is baking in all of that hard-won learning into how we offer the service for you. And I think it's sometimes underappreciated. We're talking a lot about Kube right now, but if you look at the amount of skill in the world for that technology, it's far lower than the demand for that skill. And that's not going to change anytime soon. We don't need everybody learning those lessons over again on their own. So you either get it out of a service that provides that for you somehow, or you get it through community participation. And I don't think we know everything yet at all. Most experience in the container space, both in Cloud Foundry and in Kubernetes, has been fundamentally stateless apps, which are fundamentally easy apps. Like, those are not hard problems to solve. In the Kube space especially, we're seeing a lot of data workloads, AI workloads, machine learning, more complex stateful systems. And I think we're having a lot of success with that, but it's early, so there's a lot to learn there.
One of the reasons for asking about that learning is because for enterprises, they're having to learn to build and push those services forwards. And it doesn't matter whether you're a telco pushing forward to a large base or whether you're an enterprise pushing forward to what are now very disparate business units who, if you don't supply it, they're going to go elsewhere. How do they get themselves to understand the building of services, the creation of services, what Cloud Foundry, for example, offers in that service space?
Cloud Foundry community especially, I think, is good about having a user lens on participation in the community versus just a provider lens. I think that's one way. Companies who are really betting on these technologies should personally participate as a user in the communities to share that learning with each other. The other advice I always give customers is, just go do it. There's no better way to figure that stuff out than to just go do it. Especially in enterprises, there's a lot of conversational paralysis that happens where they just are thinking about what it could be. All the companies that I've worked with who've been successful in adopting these new things have done it because they just said, I don't know all the answers. I'm going to start with that project. It's of the right risk profile for me to do it, and I'm going to go figure it out. And then take what they learn and repeat it and standardize it and apply it. And doing it and participation in the community together, you'll get close. Just be prepared for the pace of change. I was talking to a client, and in our service, we support two versions back on Kubernetes. And we launched our service 14, 15 months ago, and we've had 5 versions of Kube. 14 months. Two back will get 6 months, and then you're going to have to upgrade to the newest thing. So it's just a very fast environment.
That's an interesting challenge to have, isn't it? Because when we historically talk 2 versions back, we'd be talking 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah, 7 years back.
And a lot of customers struggle to apply patches from 3 months ago, right, let alone this concept that I'm only supported for 6 months. How do we increase that velocity? Cloud Foundry is getting there because they're starting to realize how quickly they can iterate. But how do we make that message part of their application development DNA?
Part of it is a burden on the platforms themselves to make that as easy and automated and safe as possible. And Cloud Foundry's done a lot of work with that. Kube is doing, I think, a reasonable job at that as well. The platforms themselves have to be designed for that level of change. And historical systems, like you're referencing, in general, were not designed for that pace of change. The other half of it comes down to just client culture, user culture, having to accept that that's the pace you're going to run at. You either have to do that by having mature CI/CD, which I think it's been interesting to watch the container space. All of us who are working on container technology just assume people have good CI/CD, but most enterprises don't have good CI/CD, and they have to in order to be successful with these new technologies. Good automation, or you have to decide that you're not good at that and you're going to bring in somebody to help you do it, whether that's a managed cloud provider or whether that's some other partner. You're going to partner with somebody who's going to be good at keeping your platform up to date for you.
If we look forward, you've already talked about how this new version is a replacement. We've just talked there about supporting 2 versions back. How quickly can you begin to migrate customers onto this new version of Cloud Foundry? And will you support enterprise for a slightly longer period? Because it's not technically an upgrade, it's a replacement technology.
First and foremost, especially at IBM, we don't abandon customers and strand them where they are. When we have new things like Cloud Foundry Enterprise that are evolutions of old things, there's plenty of time that we give those customers to make those migrations. We recognize that as much as we want them to be fast and modern, reality rears its head sometimes. Those are long-term processes to give them options to move over. We're not removing or unsupporting any of the old stuff anytime soon. However, we think the new models are compelling, they're more cost-effective, they're more agile, and you know, a lot of it happens. If you give them something better, there's a natural gravity, and you're left with the few that have some extenuating circumstance where it's going to take them a while. And we tend to just work one-on-one with clients on those things. New stuff, I think the new model is the right place for people to create new environments.
One of the holdouts, actually, that fits into that category have been people in highly regulated industries.
Sure.
Banking, healthcare, financial services. They're starting to move, but they're slow to move.
Yeah.
And that's because they have all this compliance, all this regulation, but also they've got such heavyweight processes. You were talking about CICD, which they struggle to find the balance with. How do you see that unrolling over the next year, 2 years? Because at some point, they've got to make this decision to go. All the challenger companies coming up are going to eat their market.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm a firm believer that there's a stream of momentum in an industry around where investments are happening and where the energy is in a technology domain. And if you get off of that stream, it's almost hopeless at some point. You have to stay aligned with where the investments are happening. There's no magic answer to customers who have challenging processes that make that hard. They just got to work their way through it and prioritize it the right way. These new technologies are enabling new approaches. Compliance is a great example. I've recently done a ton of work in my teams around compliance for SOC 2 and HIPAA and PCI and things like that. So I have the same challenges as everybody else. And we've done a ton of work on automation and data gathering. Systems like Cloud Foundry and Kubernetes are so metadata rich that you can get a lot of information out of them that help you automate some of those heavyweight processes in a way you couldn't before. The challenge in the past was everyone said you should automate everything, but everything was different. And so it's a never-ending challenge to automate. But with containers, there are separation of concerns and layering that actually let you solve some of these problems. And so I'm hopeful that as people adopt the technology more, it'll become easier for them to stay at pace. And of course, the technologies will slow down too. Kube and Cloud Foundry won't rev every 3 months forever. They'll get to a point where they've solved the major problem, the new stuff's moved up a layer, and those are solid and infrequently updating. We're not there, but it doesn't happen like that forever.
So if we look at over the next 6 months, what are we going to see from you?
One of the big things over the next 6 to 12 months, there's probably two areas I'm excited about. One is Istio and the adoption of Service Mesh into the standard architectures that people have. You see activity in Cloud Foundry to enable that. There's tons of activity in Kubernetes. That's a really interesting next level of the stack that's being built that will enable enterprises to be successful with microservices because they can have the process and policy people control the system without screwing up the efficiency that the development teams get. And then the other one is there's a lot of energy right now around bringing container-based workloads, apps like Cloud Foundry represents, and functions, serverless functions, together in a more unified way. We've had basically three independent stacks so far with activity like Irini, with new projects like Knative. The community is finally starting to work together on how do we have all three personas on top of a single stack. And I think that'll be really powerful for customers because I think most real apps have some blend of all three of those ideas. They're good for different things. And today it's too hard to use them together. I'd love to see that problem get solved.
I'm excited looking forward. To me, this is really like being at the beginning of the 90s. We've got all that energy back with things changing all the time in software development, and we're moving the focus back to making devs excited about stuff. Jason, thank you for your time today.
Yeah, thank you. It was great.